Any questions? You don't?
Okay, you got the, once you got the person's God, concept of God, then how do you figure, like, with her, it was her father and her husband, that image, when the concept was related to, so how did you come to that?
Well, they've, Yeah, the answer was, how did I know that, the question was, how did I know that described her father and her husband? Well, from studies that have been done, we know that by about age 6 or 7, a child's concept of authority is fixed, and it rarely changes. And so we know that normally that authority is going to be the father figure. If you have someone who didn't have a father, it's really interesting that their concept will often be just a passive God. He's really not there and he really doesn't help. It can also be the authorities at a children's home if you were in an orphanage, however they treated you. But it's some kind of authority. So I know right away it's going to be an authority. And then when she starts telling me about her father abandoning her and then her husband doing the same thing, then I have a fairly good idea that that's going to be who her God looks like. So I just kind of chase that rabbit, and there it is.
How much a role does your mother play? Like, if your dad was gone a lot, if he ran away from the household or whatever, does your mom play any of that role, authority?
Yeah, she will. The mother can play that same kind of role, and I've seen that. And often how that'll affect a kid, you'll also see them as responsibility takers, because a mother will be more dependent on a child. And so if your dad's bailed out on you, mom does need some help. And so she may just put you in a position of authority and responsibility, and now your concept is that authorities don't take care of it, you do. And when it comes to issues in your life, then you're the one that's got to handle the whole thing. And that's pretty tough. So, yeah, that'll fit in there a lot, too. It's a crazy thing, because there we are believing in God with all our heart and mind, but in our emotions we have to get busy to straighten everything out ourselves. And since you're the creature and not the creator, your anxiety just goes right up through the roof. Yeah.
Jenny's husband, as far as she was concerned, responded to her like her dad did. Mm-hmm. I have another friend that her dad walked out on when she was in high school, and her husband did the same thing. Her kids were in high school. Does the constant person somehow cause that, or did she choose somebody to do that?
Okay, that's a good question. The question, I think what you're asking is why the similarity? Here's a woman whose father bailed out on her, and then her husband bails out on her. And then the example you're giving to someone else like that. Well, what happens, sometimes we might even create a little bit of that ourselves. If you had a rejecting father, and you're a woman, you've had to learn how to live with him. And when you leave the house, you leave the house with this invisible bag called Tricks for Men. And they only work on that kind of a man. So my daughter knows how to manipulate me, how to control me, how to let me have her way. She also knows how to handle my rejection. And she knows and she can read me when she's pushed me too far. When she goes out and finds a fellow, she's going to find someone like me. And if he's not like me, she's going to slowly make him into me. Because that's all she knows. And so you see some women in that kind of a spiral where, say, father was abusive, he was unemotional, he didn't care about him, he wasn't active. And they had to learn how to cope in that and to take charge and do it themselves. So when they get married, they have a hard time letting the husband do anything at all. And they may be even covertly running him away because they're creating in him the very thing they don't like because it's the only thing they know how to cope with. I mean, you'll find women who've learned how to live with an alcoholic father that'll marry an alcoholic man. They know how to handle him, and they're really upset when he sobers up. Go ahead.
Is the man really like that, or did Jenny just receive her husband to be like that?
And that's why we go by feeling, because we're not really living out of the fact. We live out of perception. And so we have to deal with a person's perception. So he might have been just exactly like that, or there may just be some elements in there. But once the spiral begins and the filter's been developed, then that's actually how you see it. That's how you begin to perceive them, if it was done that way or not. And I think all of us can probably relate to someone coming up to us and saying, you said such and such, and it did this and this to me, and we said, we don't remember saying that, and that's not what I meant. But they had a filter developed, and that's how they took it, and they've lived as though that's exactly what you meant. So what we're dealing with here is how she's living. Yeah, Bob.
What were you fishing for on the question about how do you handle guilt? Because it followed the discussion about the five verbs.
If I were in a normal counseling session, I would have pursued that with specific instances of guilt. And what we'll find there is that with a poor concept of God, you're probably not laying that guilt at the Lord's feet, but there's some kind of self-punishment that you go through. And what I was looking for in that was another idol. How do you handle guilt? You notice I asked her what her hurts were and then said, how did you handle it? Because I wanted to find those idols. I want her to understand what they are and at least be able to see them. And I was fishing around for more of that kind of information. But it helps a lot to see how a person handles guilt, and it tells you a lot about their relationship with God. Yes, Scott?
Do you see a connection between self and the wrong concept?
Well, yeah. Right. And Scott's saying, what's the connection between self and the concept of God? And there's a strong connection there, because if this is your concept of authority, then that's the kind of identity that gets developed. And so you can have a strong authoritarian father, and part of your identity will be unacceptable, because no matter how well you did it, you didn't do it well enough. So you need to just keep trying harder and harder and harder, and you can feel unacceptable.
When you're fixing the problem of the funnel, okay, the problem of the kid, between the divorce, father, the kid, how did you choose that one of all the different?
Well, because she's a tough nut to crack. It took all of that to get her to this point. The kid was just finally the thing that made her blow the top. You know, to say, I really can't handle any more at all. But so it's taken the Lord a while to bring that around, but that was the last most recent event, and it's the thing that's really concerning her. And so one of the things I want to do in discipleship is I want to look at root issues, but I also want to look at what's concerning you. We can deal with the root issue and deal with what's concerning you at the same time. But, you know, I couldn't have, at this point, said, she said, the kids are really bothering me. I could have said, well, I'll just go over and talk to them, and left her in her same condition. And that wouldn't have done her any good at all. I'll go talk to your kids, and we'll have everybody else talk to them, and maybe something will happen. That kind of encouragement when she needed a deeper work.
When you ask those questions about your concept of God and what you fear and all those things, I have a very hard time, and I've heard these questions three or four times. I have a very hard time coming up with any answer of my own. But when someone answers it or suggests an answer, I say, yeah, I feel that way sometimes. What does that say about me? That I can't.
Well, come on up here and sit down. No, that does say something, and you and I can talk about it later.
Okay.
All right? It's not anything serious, but, you know, it's something we could talk about. Okay? Because that might reveal something. Huh? Well, I didn't want to say that.
What is the possible way she might have handled guilt? I've been trying to tell him how I would handle it. I don't know what are some answers.
Well, you might go eat and reward yourself, make yourself feel better. You might beat yourself over the back with a whip. to punish yourself. You might cut yourself off from others and say, well, that's just the way it is. You might go out and get drunk when you feel guilty, which causes a neat little spiral because the next day you feel guiltier and you just had an event prove what you felt about yourself. So now you're really in the spiral. You can go through those kind of things. You might run and go work when you feel guilty. So there are just a variety of things. It just depends on the person. And then again, some of that's learned behavior. How did mom and dad handle guilt? Was it avoidance and they cast the blame on others? That's how a lot of people handle guilt. You know, just cast it on another person and don't take any of it. There'll be a lot of ways you could do that. It's as varied as the person is that you're talking to. And what we're looking at here is personalizing the information and seeing how they handle things. And it's strange. Some people read, some people preach. Some people, when they're guilty and they committed some really gross immorality, go out and hand out tracts. And so what you find then is handing out tracts isn't a religious activity for them, but it's just guilt-oriented. So you want to sniff that out for everybody. You notice we got quite a bit of information with very few questions. You know, and we really didn't do as good a job as I'd like to do. I would see someone 8 to 10, maybe 12 hours of total counseling to really work it out. And I've never agreed to this kind of thing anywhere, and the only reason I do is because there's people here that can follow up on them. I wouldn't do it. You know, I wouldn't even start the things. This is the only place I've ever done it. Anybody else? Well, I don't suppose there's probably not as great a danger as not doing anything at all for someone. But the enemy is going to kick into high gear to pull her out of this. If she really wants to live in the Lord's presence and rest, because that's been a stronghold that's made her ineffective. And it makes her a weak believer because all it takes to shut her down is a phone call from the kids. She could be ready to preach to 10,000 people and the Lord's laid a tremendous message on her heart and somebody brings up a phone and says it's your son, he's on drugs again, he's blaming you, and she'd shut down. So it's a real crucial issue. It makes her ineffective. And the enemy doesn't like anyone to be effective. So he's going to kick into high gear on this, and I want somebody around to say, wait a minute, this is normal. This is what we expect. This proves that it's true. It doesn't prove that it's not. Stand fast. You're having a reversal. Hang in there. So I just, see, my goal, and I stopped a long time ago getting excited when I just saw movement in a person's life or when they came to Christ. I get excited when I see them a year later and they're doing well. And so that's my goal with people.
How soon would you jump in to explain their concept of God? You said you counsel maybe 18 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
Would this be the last thing you do, or this be after the first 3 hours you remember?
Well, actually, I'll often this would be later on, towards the middle of the sessions, is where I did it. A lot of people I see are unbelievers, and of course, unbelievers and carnal believers act the same way. So I spend the first couple of sessions with anybody getting a hook in them to make sure they come back to finish up. Anybody else?
Yeah. So what is one practical thing for like condemned that you would actually help someone walk through feeling condemned? What is one practical thing you would do with them?
Well, this is where, again, it's helpful to see them on a continuing basis. Because the way you eventually walk out of those kind of feelings is making a choice not to. And the enemy blinds us by telling us that we can't make a choice. And so the real struggle is in the area of choice. Can I choose it or not? I went through that myself, just living so many years depressed, until finally one day I always felt depressed because I was unacceptable to God. And I just said, Lord, if you don't kill me by noon today, I'm going to take it as fact that you accept me. And I remember saying that. And if I'm not dead at noon, I'm not going to listen to this depression any longer. I'm not going to be condemned. I'm not going to be judged. I'm going to go on. And as you can tell, I made it past noon. But I had to really tough it out and say it. See, because you're dealing with lying emotions. And those lying emotions get a stronghold there, and they hold on, and even though you're totally forgiven, you feel condemned. And at some point, you've got to say, okay, Scripture says I'm not. And then you got to walk in it. Now, here's a scary thing. If you believe the only time you're not condemned is when you don't feel condemned, God can never let you not feel condemned, because you're not condemned no matter what your emotions tell you. But that's what it is. See, some people say, I'll believe I'm saved when I feel I'm saved. Well, if you believe you're only saved when you feel you're saved, when John 3:16 doesn't say that's what'll happen, it just says it's on the basis of what God does. If God allows you those feelings, He's encouraging your false theology. So He can't do it. You have to accept the fact, faith in the Spirit without feeling, that I am saved. And so that's tough. You got to walk a person through it, and you got to keep encouraging them and see that they make that step to begin to say no to that lying stuff, and how they feel, and to start to take this grid apart and not walk through that.
You say no by acting like you would if
it's the truth? Yep. You tough it out. And it's really hard. In His presence, you'll have all the strength you need, but you tough it out. It's not any different than denying yourself either. That first time you do, it's really hard. When someone's really offended you, and to say, no, I'm going to walk right in there and act as though I love them because I do. That's hard. And to let them leave believing they had the upper hand on you. That's tough, but you got to tough it out and do it. Back to your question about a concept of God, if people can't answer those questions, and I don't know, you know, since I don't know what applies to people, they say stuff. So it could be, sometimes I've found people have trouble answering that when they're emotionally blocked and they've been hurt by authorities, so they just don't want to think about them. They'd rather think of God in the intellectual area of their life than they would in the emotional area, because they've just kind of shut down there and put a lid on it. And just said, hey, emotions hurt, and for them, feeling equals pain. So as soon as I say to them, would you tell me how I feel, that equals pain, because any time they ever got emotionally close, they were hurt, so they bottled those emotions up and they live up here. And they just say, I don't want to. And then there's also the chance that the reason they can't answer it is that I have no idea. And at that point, the test isn't even important. But it's not crucial to anything that we did up there.
If I have a wrong feeling about God, so I can't have the wrong feeling about it.
Yeah, that could be. Sure.
Well, I can confirm your answer, because you were telling me yesterday I was living to be a good and evil, which I decided is true. And that would also go with, I can't answer those questions either. I listen to your faith, and I listen to it, and I'll press the button and run it back, and I'll try to answer those. I never had an answer. And I'm surprised you didn't. I
really
bragged on it.
Yeah. And when you gave him that BS, you got to. So I just like a lot. I don't have any interest in that. Well, yeah, now, there's also the chance, too, when you give this test, because I'm always looking at someone that's struggling. You could have answered all those great, because you've been walking in the Lord, and you know who the Father is. And believe me, I don't in any way think nobody grew till they came to this conference. You know, I know that the Lord has done work in their lives far beyond anything I may ever see. So you may get up there, and I'm not trying to create problems if you don't have one. So you go through that thing, you may answer it, well, He's near to me, He loves me, I'm full of hope. At my worst moment, that's how I feel. That's how I would answer it right now. At my worst moment, He accepts me. At my worst moment, He loves me. My worst moment, He's near to me. That's how you would see me answer. But what we're talking about is dealing with struggling people. Yeah.
And two, you can answer all the questions. I run into that all the time. And when I run into that situation, you know, when Mike was asking the questions about Dad and he abandoned me, you've already got that up there. And so I just, on the side, I fill out there, who is God for them?
dad like this, well, tell me about your dad, and you have them go through the things, and, you know, especially when they come in carrying this blank piece of paper and saying, I can't answer any of these questions. All I do is go back and get their history, and I fill it out from their history, and I said, now, if I were Satan, this is what
right.
I would do. And most of the time, like 99% of the time, it's right on. So you don't need the questions to find out a person's emotional concepts of God.
And it's not a fair test in that we're asking you to take it at your worst, but the enemy isn't fair, and he hits you at your worst. So we just want to see what happens at your worst. But again, at your worst, it can be all good, and that doesn't mean you're lying about it and you're emotionally blocked or anything else. Forget that. You're doing just fine. And you don't need to worry. Anybody else?
Can you imagine something you said earlier? You said you spent a lot of time with people because it's hard to tell the difference between carnal Christian and non-Christian.
Uh-huh.
What are some indicators that you use to tell them? Sometimes it's really hard to talk with them.
I can't say that I really can. Treat them both the same way and look at the root issue in their life. It's going to be self in both of them. And, you know, there's two aspects to the cross. There's the body and there's the blood. And the blood of Jesus was shed for the forgiveness of sins, but we were put in him and his body was broke and put to death so we could be put to death. And that message has been separated. Romans doesn't separate it. So we have a tendency to tell people to accept Christ, and we only tell half the message for forgiveness of sins, and we never tell them anything at all about the freedom from sin. And I think they should both be together. That it's not that he just came to keep me out of hell, but he also came to deliver me from my daily hell. And I don't want to be tricky here, but there's going to be a lot of unsaved people in heaven. Because the term salvation in Scripture, and you can just look it up yourself, go to any concordance, salvation is referring to today. Israel says, where is the God of my salvation? They're not saying, when's he going to come and get me out of heaven? They're saying, get us out of this fix today. And you shall call his name Jesus, because he'll save the people from their sins. He does forgive us from our sins, but he also saves you from sin. Romans 6 makes it clear so you're not under its power. And Paul says salvation is a daily event because he said, the cross is foolishness to others, but to us who are being saved, he's talking about the present there, it is the power of God to salvation. Salvation is not just getting into heaven. Nicodemus cleared that up and he said you've got to be born again to get into heaven. So there are a lot of people who are born again that are going to heaven, but they've never experienced salvation from any one thing. They go through their whole life still controlled by circumstance, by the world, by the events, and by sin. And biblically, Paul would say to those people, yes, you're going to heaven, but you're not saved from anything. You're saved from hell, but you're not saved from the daily hell. And I know that's confusing because the term always means, as we use it, are you saved? That means, are you going to heaven? Paul would say to you, aren't you saved? Why are you acting that way? And so there's that aspect of it. And, I mean, just look in your concordance, and you'll find that's what the word means. So when it comes to a person, if they're carnal or unbelieving, I don't know what they are. I'm going to present the whole gospel to them, pick them up wherever they're at, and just get on with them.